is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On Heat, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm here as always with David Rommel, and we are opening up the mailbag, doing a rendition of Tuesday transmissions. We usually do the mailbag on Monday, but we had a recap of the Pacers game instead, so pushed it back a day. But we're really excited about this group of questions, so let's get right into it. Our first question comes from Lee Seaton. Re-signing Dion Waiters has to be one of the primary priorities during the offseason. I mean, come on, the guy is playing lights out. And obviously Spo has figured out how to consistently bring this out of him when no other coach could. I feel confident that this is a 50-win team if everyone stays healthy. Do you agree that re-signing Dion Waiters has become a top priority for the Heat this offseason? What do you think, David?
I think it has. I think not many Heat fans at this point would disagree with that. I think there's always going to be a sticking point regarding the potential price tag. I think ideally you'd want him to opt into the second year of his deal, which pays him, I think, under $4 million or something along those lines. So, I mean, it would certainly be financially advantageous for Miami if he took less money. But, you know, there's always the chance that he could regress. I'm not sure that this is a 50-win team if health was an issue, to be honest with you. But I think Waiters does figure prominently in next year's plans. I mean, obviously, he's bought into the system. He fits well with Goran Dragic. They're a good pairing. You can continue to bring Tyler Johnson off the bench while still developing other guys there, like if they had kept Briante Weber or even Roddy Magruder, who was slated to, you know, play some guard at some point. Tyler Johnson, obviously. And, you know, there's still, I think, enough pieces there where they can continue to start Waiters. And it fits well. I mean, he provides a good scoring punch. And, again, the complementary offensive style to Goran, I think, is the biggest factor. You want him to be able to continue that drive and kick game. He's gotten much more effective at the rim, which was an issue, obviously, early on. And, you know, I don't expect him to shoot 40% plus from three-point range next season. That just doesn't strike me as something sustainable. But even if he's somewhere around 36 to 38, that would still be a huge upgrade, I think, and certainly something worth investing in.
And it's worth bringing up now that recent article, I think Barry Jackson, the Herald, reporting that Dion Waiters wants to make this offseason a quick process. He doesn't want to deal with the situation, the drama, so to speak, that he was dealing with last summer when, you know, Kevin Durant leaves Oklahoma City and the Thunder decide to rescind their restricted free agent offers to him. He enters the free agent pool very late in the process, therefore has to sign a very minimum contract with the Heat on a one-year deal. And the Heat got lucky that they were able to get Waiters because Dwayne Wade left for Chicago at you know, a late stage in the free agent process. So, you know, Waiters kind of falls into Miami's lap, and Miami sort of falls into Dion Waiters' lap at the same time, and they're able to make it a happy marriage for a season. So I think Waiters wants to avoid any of that sort of drama, and if he could sign within the first hour of free agency, it sounds like that's what he wants to do, right? It's just like, look, let's get the parameters set, I'll sign. And that might be best for Miami, as to not allow Waiters to enter the marketplace and drive up his price, right? Like, if you say, like, let's sign him, let's get you $9, $10 million a year, let's get this done, that could very well be $8 million less than what the market could, per year, than what the market could potentially drive him up for if guys like Evan Turner are getting $18 million a year. That said, I do disagree with Lee. I don't think it is a top priority. I, as much as I want it to be, because I love Waiters Island, I love Waiters Peninsula.
Yes.
But I'm not sure it's the top priority. It might be the second priority. It might be the B or the A-minus plan or the 2A plan, so to speak.
They're not calling him at 12:01 a.m.
They're gonna try to get in that room with Blake Griffin. They're going to try to get in a room with these big free agents that might be available. They're going to try to get into a room with Gordon Hayward. Like, I think that's going to be the top priority. That said, if they are calling Waiters at 12:01 a.m. and Waiters says, I'll resign for $8 million a year, then yeah, I think they're just going to do it because the value there is so great and you can create cap space in other ways. You can create cap space, quite frankly, if he's going to sign cheap enough, then you could just let James Johnson, Willie Reed walk and Bosch's contract comes off the books. That's still enough, and you can waive Wayne Ellington. That's going to be really close. And then Stretch McRoberts, that's going to be enough money to get you the money that you're probably going to need to go chase another max level free agent, and you could still keep Waiters at that price. But I don't think that he's going to be a top free agent, which is unfortunate because I'd like to just see them run this crew back next year, add a draft pick to it, make maybe a fringe trade here or there, or kind of turn out the bottom of this roster a little bit with some guys with potential and call it a day. But I don't think it's going to be top priority based on what Pat Riley does. He likes to go chase a big name. Waiters is fantastic and great and amazing, and we want him here in South Beach, but I don't think it's going to be a top priority.
Yeah, I mean, I could see that point. You know, I think it's always important to stoke multiple fires simultaneously, even if you're, you know, looking for firewood to fuel one particularly big, if unrealistic, fire. And that's, you know, the potential whale that you could seek. And, you know, that's why he has other guys there like Nick Arison and Ellsberg to make contact with these free agents, you know, at the turn of the clock. You know, just to let them know they are a priority, if not the biggest priority.
And here's the good news, right? Is that guys like the guys that could be on the market, these should be relatively quick decisions. There is no Kevin Durant who's going to mull this thing over. Blake Griffin's either staying or leaving. And if he's leaving, Miami's got as good a chance as anybody, right?
I don't know. You don't know about that.
You think Blake Griffin might be the only one that holds out for... Like, how many other, like, Gordon Hayward's a restricted free agent. So either he's, or not a restricted free agent, sorry. He's either opting in or he's opting out. And if he opts out, he's got to have an idea of where he's going.
Not necessarily. I mean, you could always re-sign with the same team. Just, you know, you can always, again, it's, we have to assume that players enjoy the process. Some maybe don't later on in their careers. But I think the process of being wined and dined, of going out there and meeting with a franchise and meeting, you know, specific personnel is appealing on multiple levels, seeing if you can feel comfortable in an environment. I mean, we've heard so many times in the fallout that the swaying factor for Kevin Durant was hearing how the players bought into the system, how they all agreed to change their games and just play comfortably with one another. And that's what he wanted, something different than what Oklahoma City could present. And I think that's important to different guys as well. I mean, and we don't know the mindset of a guy like Griffin or Hayward or anybody else that's a free agent for that matter. I mean, it's nice to it's nice to hear Waiters say how much he wants to prioritize re-signing. But again, how will he feel that way if at 12 o'clock he doesn't get a call from somebody in the front office? I mean, what if somebody like what they did with the Lakers and Luol Deng throws an insane amount of money for somebody who might not necessarily live up to that size contract? And all of a sudden, he's weighing the option. Now he did say certain things that resonate on a personal level. One, that his mom wanted to stay, that his kids, son enjoyed South Florida. I mean, those are the kinds of things that make it seem like Miami is certainly the top contender, and that makes sense.
Do you think that gives them an advantage? Do you say, like, and we know that the Heat have done this with guys like Udonis Haslem, for example, who are like, look, this is the money we're going to get you. Sit tight. For cap reasons, we can't give it to you now. We've got to sort out things with bird rights. We've got to sort out things with your cap hold, blah, blah, blah. Like, because we know how if we get into the weeds with NBA cap stuff, like the order of which you sign players could have a dramatic effect on the cap. Do the Heat approach Waiters and say, we've got you. You are going to be with the Heat. We just can't sign you now. We have to go. We need to sign you second or third because of X, Y, and Z cap reasons. Maybe that's a situation where Miami's able to do that and Waiters has enough loyalty and the Heat have enough loyalty to do that. I don't know how much this recent Dwayne Wade stuff figures into their reputation, so to speak.
I don't think it does.
I'm hoping it doesn't. And maybe it's something like that, but I don't – just the general sentiment that Waiters being a top priority, I think he's a priority. I think that going after – for Riley – going after a big whale, so to speak, is going to be the top priority. And once that becomes evident, if it becomes evident that that's not going to happen, they will re-sign Waiters. I'm hoping they re-sign Waiters regardless. But yes. I think that's going to be within the order of things. If we're talking about priorities and we're talking about hierarchies and orders of things, I don't think Waiters is at the top of that.
Do you think I mean, of the top free agents, all of them are a quote unquote bigger priority than Waiters, you think? I mean, guys like Hayward and Griffin, certainly, but even a guy like maybe Serge Ibaka or Paul Millsap, somebody that might be on Miami's radar.
I would say no to Ibaka. Probably not.
Not a priority or not a potential draw even for Miami at any level?
I would say no to Ibaka and Millsap probably for any level. No, I wouldn't say no to Millsap. I think that Millsap fits in what Miami might want to do. I would say no to Ibaka just because of the salary that he's going to command because of how many years he's been in the league and what a max contract equals for that. Hmm. And he's just like, I don't know, man. I don't think he's that good. I just don't. Like, he's got like all his ability is there. Like, oh, a stretch four who can also defend at a high level and can shoot threes at a consistent level. It's like, yeah, that sounds great on paper, but it just never really translates. It hasn't for like the last 3 years. It hasn't translated. But I don't want to get into a big whole Ibaka thing. But I think Waiters, given the way he fits and the way that Ibaka would potentially fit, I think Waiters might be better for the Heat than Ibaka. Millsap at the same side is like, he's older than Ibaka, but he's better than Ibaka still, I think. And the production that he has, maybe he's a higher priority. I don't know. It's tough. But obviously, I think just Gordon Hayward potentially being out there, very likely being out there, and Blake Griffin maybe being out there, just those two alone. Like, the Heat are going to have to get an answer on those two first before they re-sign Dion Waiters, I think.
Okay. Here's a hypothetical, and I know that we have to wrap this up fairly quickly. Let's say you get Pat Riley and noted Georgetown alum Alonzo Mourning on the phone with Otter Porter at 12:01. You throw as much as you potentially can for him and say, you're the star of our future. We want to build our team around you. What does that sound like? I mean, that sounds like a very realistic possibility to me.
So we've got a couple of extra mailbag questions that we want to save for later this week that I think I'm going to leave that as a tease because I was thinking about this on the drive home today. I've got an interesting proposition for you, which is the same proposition, but like kind of to the next level that you're giving me right now in Otto Porter.
Okay.
I want to tease it, short answer. I think the Heat really need to look at restricted free agents, and I don't think that's something we've talked enough about. I think
Washington's financial situation is a tight one, especially after the recent trade for Bojan Bogdanovic.
I want to dive into all of this at length because you're right. We need to get to like three other questions. I want to dive into all of this at length later this week because this is a fascinating conversation we could spend 10 or 15 minutes on.
Yeah. But, you know, in the meantime, free agency is still several months away. But right now, the Heat are in a really interesting playoff chase. They've got multiple home games coming up, and the best opportunity for you to go see those is by downloading the SeatGeek app.
That's right. I mean, a 5-game homestand starting Wednesday. That's 5 chances to go see the Heat live in person while they make this playoff push. And the best way to see them is, like you said, David, get SeatGeek. I don't have a lot of time to look for tickets. I don't, frankly, have the energy to waste on looking for tickets. I don't want to do all that work. Why do more work when you can do less work, right? That's our motto here at Locked On Heat. And SeatGeek is by far the easiest way to find tickets for any Miami Heat game that you want to see this season. It's never been easier to get the guaranteed seats that you want for a great value. I have the SeatGeek app on my phone, and it's by far the best way I found to shop for tickets. I could be anywhere, and with just a few taps, I can instantly find the seats for this weekend or any game of this season. With SeatGeek, you always get the best deal on every ticket because SeatGeek price compares for you by searching multiple ticket sites. That's right, all of the ticket sites, it's searching them. Prices can vary depending on where you shop, but SeatGeek will always find you the lowest available price. That's what we're talking about. No work. SeatGeek handles it. They want to help you by getting the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is giving a grade based on its value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats, and you'll be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Plus, every ticket you buy on SeatGeek is backed by their 100% guarantee. No fakes. Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase, a $20 rebate. How do you do that? Download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, click add a promo code, enter the promo code LOHEAT. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. People ask, why do I download the app instead of just going online? You can go online and do it. I recommend downloading an app because I don't know how many times I've been at a bar and somebody's been like, hey, you know who's coming to play in concert, or hey, we should go see the Heat next Saturday. And I'd be like, great, let's go find tickets. You can open up your little web browser on your phone, which is a nightmare if you've ever tried searching a ticket website on your phone, or you could just get the SeatGeek app. That's why you should have it on your phone. Go online and do it if you're home, but you should have it on your phone. Download the SeatGeek app, enter the promo code LOHEAT today.
Upcoming games against the Pelicans, Timberwolves, Trailblazers, Raptors,
I would go
Nuggets, Cavs, Wizards. I mean, so many great options there before the season wraps up.
Go see the Pelicans, man. DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, go see that before New Orleans screws that up and DeMarcus goes to the Lakers. All right, next question. Say Miami was relatively healthy all season, like they are now, and instead of going 11-30, they went 20-21 in the first half before going out on this streak. So after Wednesday night's game, this question was asked to us last week, they would be 40-25. So we're looking at a 40-ish win team right now. Would people be talking about this team as a dark horse to make the Eastern Conference Finals? A lot of doubt about the Heat comes from that poor start. That question from Billy Kuhn.
It's a great question on a number of levels, but I also, I mean, where to even begin? I just don't know if the poor start was actually in any way tied to health.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, there certainly were some mitigating factors there. I think most of all, strangely as it might sound, losing Deion Waiters for that big chunk of time probably changed. Well, it altered the schedule for them to coalesce the way they have since mid-January. And, you know, if you remember back to where he was at the start of the season, it was pretty bad. I mean, the inconsistency at the rim was the most glaring thing. There wasn't much perimeter shooting there. All of a sudden, he tore his groin. Sat out, was it 19 games? I can never remember the exact number, but it was a pretty big chunk of time there. And, you know, and then he came back and was working his way on. All of a sudden, caught fire then, and that's when the Heat started going streaking. But I don't know that health was necessarily what led to the 11-30 start so much as it just took an amount of time for this team to kind of find its identity. You know, there was a lot of pressure being put on Justice Winslow to handle a huge workload. Hassan Whiteside, I think, was getting an inordinate amount of touches, you know, having to live up to his contract. Goran was trying to, you know, grow into the leadership role and distribute the ball evenly to everybody and, you know, kind of taking a seat back. But for the most part, he was their most consistent scoring option and has been all season long. But, you know, even the role players, Tyler Johnson was struggling. James Johnson wasn't exactly the best player or the version of him that we've seen now. This is certainly a group that's gotten better as the season's progressed. And I don't think that health is necessarily what led to them being as poor as they were at the start of the season.
Yeah, if Waiters never tears his groin or whatever the nasty injury was, I don't know that this team is a 50-win team or a 45-win team right now because of exactly what you're saying. I mean, half the roster was turned over. This is a roster that expected to have Wade and Bosch in the rotation, and they weren't. It takes a long time. And that's why Eric Spoelstra deserves credit and recognition and as coach of the year possibly, is because he was able to take a ragtag group of guys who had never played with each other and turn them into a playoff team almost, you know, or potentially. And that's why, but it wasn't like if the Heat were healthy, they would have gone 500 through the first half of the season. I'm not sure that that's what was going to happen. Maybe if Waiters isn't hurt, the difference is that they're not 11-30, but they're 14-whatever or 15-whatever. I don't think that all of a sudden that they're a 500 or near 500 team. This team was bad at the beginning of the year. It had problems. Like you talked about Whiteside getting too many touches and him not passing out of the post, and a lot of the three-pointers weren't going down, and the rotations were weird. And those are the natural growing pains of a roster. Maybe those growing pains get fixed faster if Waiters isn't as hurt, or if Winslow doesn't get injured, or if Josh Richardson doesn't get injured. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I just don't see it, though.
I don't see it either. And I think that the difference between this team and a team that was more healthy might be a couple of wins at this point in the season, but nothing dramatic. That said, so that's the first part. The second part is, could this team have be looked at as a dark horse to make the Eastern Conference Finals? I think people are starting to come around to what this Heat team is, regardless. And a lot of people, I was listening to the Low Post this morning, Zach Lowe, he had a podcast with Kevin Arnovitz, and they were talking about the Heat. and they want to see them get in the eighth seed. And if they do, they're saying that they're going to be a fun team to watch. But we're still like look at the top of this conference. I mean, it's the Cavaliers who own it. It's the Celtics who are so deep and so talented. It's the Wizards whose backcourt is among the best in the NBA. I don't think that the Raptors who are deep and talented and making win now moves, and have been together even longer than this Heat team. So, or I shouldn't even say even, much longer than this Heat team. I don't know that the Heat are a dark horse. I just think that there are a potential team to be a lot of fun in the playoffs, and this ride has been a lot of fun. But I don't think that we should set our expectations as high as conference finals, even an appearance or anything like that. It's just, this is a fun group, but it's nonetheless a group and a season that we're building on.
It's tough to answer this, you know, rhetorical question if, you know, if they had been healthy, if they did have a 40 and 20 something record now, would they be looked at as a dark horse? And even if they were, even if they did have that kind of record, I think they would be dismissed in the same level that the Atlanta Hawks teams were dismissed years ago, or that the Celtics were dismissed. I mean, they still lack that name, that superstar potential. And even if you had gotten some great consistent performances from Waiters and Winslow and Whiteside and Dragic, I don't think that you'd look at this roster and say, yeah, there's one guy here that changes everything completely, that can change the makeup of a game, both offensively and defensively, and sway it in Miami's favor. And, you know, look, Cleveland has that, obviously, in LeBron. I think there are still questions about Boston. And Boston's playing as well as any team in the league at this point, even as good as a team like Golden State or Cleveland. And I think there are still people that have questions and concerns. They've still yet, as you pointed out a number of times, they've still yet to make it out of the first round, despite having a roster very similar to this one. I mean, sure, they've gotten better. They've made some additions here and there. But you look at this roster, you say Isaiah Thomas, nice scorer in the regular season. Is he a guy that can bring that, you know, almost 30 points per game average in the playoffs when defenses tighten and you can concentrate? You know tendencies a little bit during the course of a seven-game series, and maybe you might be able to shut that down. So I don't know that anybody looks at Boston and says, yeah, their ticket is punched to the Eastern Conference Finals or the NBA Finals. So I don't know that even if Miami had a sterling record, I don't know that they would necessarily be looked at as a potential contender.
Yeah, it's just, I think that, I don't even know, I'm with you as far as Boston goes. I want them to prove it before I believe in them. I do think that Kyle Lowry is going to be back. Kyle Lowry should be back in time for the playoffs with him. Raptors are better.
Rested. And yeah, this is a guy who's leading
hopefully
the league
in playing shape. In playing shape, right? Or if not, hopefully if you're the Raptors. The Wizards are just, they're playing as good as anybody in the league right now. And the Cavaliers are the Cavaliers. And that's three teams that I think are head over heels better than Miami. So we don't even, like, so anyway. That said, I think the Heat are a team that the way that they play and the way they've been playing holds up in the playoffs. They're super good defensively. They could perform in the half court. Their drive and kick game is phenomenal. Like, they're a team that could steal some games, but I just don't know that they can go as far as a conference finals. But who knows? So
I think making the playoffs would be viewed as a legitimate success story for this team
because of that 11:30 start.
So, absolutely. Yeah.
Our next question comes from Sam Danes. Since the team has been so successful without Justice Winslow on the court, do you think the Heat might look to trade him in the offseason? Maybe package him with our first rounder for an established player? Or do you think his youth and contract are too valuable? He seems like the classic will be overpaid guy, so I wouldn't mind getting rid of him now.
Well, I'll refute that last part of his question, because I don't think anybody looks at Winslow now and how he compares to other players in his draft class or other players that are going to be drafted this season. And even as a 20-year-old, I don't think anybody sees him and says, yeah, this is a guy that I want to pay. I mean,
yeah, you wouldn't max him out as a restricted free agent, right? Like, and he's not going to be one in 2 years from now. So who knows? But
unless he makes as huge a leap as Otto Porter, you know, a guy that we were just talking about. You know, a guy who was going through injuries and wasn't necessarily, you know, I was expected to be a good defensive player, but he looked lost offensively at times. And so all of a sudden, you know, the transformation began last year, has certainly shot up to a whole other level this season. But I don't know if Winslow is going to make that leap. It'd be great to expect him to do so. You know, it's an interesting question also, because I think we've talked about it on occasion that, you know, the skill set of Roddy Magruder, who's obviously started in Winslow's place, is very duplicative of what we would have expected from Winslow as far as his overall defense, guarding opposing best wings and things of that sort. And of course, providing some very necessary three-point shooting, which is what we are expecting from Winslow. Unfortunately, that didn't pan out. And now Winslow also has the other dimension of being able, to defend more players because he's taller. We keep hearing, you know, Magruder is being asked to do a lot, especially let's look at Sunday's loss against the Pacers. He's going up against a guy like Paul George, who's got a good 4 inches on him.
Winslow in that game. Yeah,
absolutely. You know, we saw that matchup before. He's matched up really, really well with guys like that. And he's quick enough to hold on to a guy like James Harden or limit him somewhat. He's also, been able to strong enough to hold a guy like LeBron James and make life more difficult for him. So he has a certain amount of versatility. I think he's also a better playmaker, something that Roddy Magruder just doesn't have at this point. And it's not to say that he couldn't, but, you know, let's look at facts. He's also 25. He's got a 5-year start on Winslow. I think you look at Winslow's potential and what we've seen from him over the year and a half when he was healthy, even less than a year and a half. Yeah. And I think you still say that you want to have Winslow as your potential starter next year. As much as we love Roddy Magruder and appreciate that he's here on a really good value deal, and can potentially be a nice playmaker or not a playmaker, a nice factor for a good team. I just don't see him as being a quality starter that would get significantly more amount of time than Winslow.
Look, it depends on what we're talking about too. When we talk about success, have the team, going back to Sam's question here, the team has been so successful. If the goal is the Heat can make the playoffs, they can win 48 games without Justice Winslow with this roster. If you just roll this team back and trade Winslow off the team and not get anything back even, right?
Yeah.
This team, if put together, this team could win 48 games in the East. And make the playoffs. But that's not the goal. And I think what you're talking about with Justice Winslow is he's got so much upside. And as good as they have been, what Winslow gives you in the playoffs, and we saw this in the playoffs last season, defensively, on the perimeter, being able to guard 5 different positions at some points. As good as Magruder has been defensively, as good as Deion Waiters has been, Josh Richardson has been good defensively, which gets overlooked. Winslow is disruptive in a way that Draymond Green is, in a way that Kawhi Leonard is. He's got that sort of disruptive potential. He's not going to just get in front of a guy and make it hard for him to score. He's also going to get steals. He's got an incredible instinct to jump passing lanes that nobody else on this roster does. In that game against winning plays, in that game against the Pacers, the Heat had 0 fast break points. Fast break points are created by turnovers. Winslow can generate turnovers at an elite level. And that's just a whole other wrinkle that he can add to this Heat roster as a starter or as a reserve or however, as long as he's in the rotation. And if you're looking to improve this team, Winslow's a guy that played 18 games this year and was never in the right fit because Miami, like we were talking about in the last question, was still trying to figure out all its pieces and how to work things out. They were putting Winslow in the James Johnson role half the time before they realized James Johnson could do all of that. If you put Winslow in a role that makes sense, and a Roddy Magruder role, if you put him in that role, I think this team is better. And this team has a much higher ceiling. And that's not to take anything away from Magruder, like you were saying, but I just think that if you want to improve this roster, one way to do that is to bring Winslow back and put him in the right in position to succeed and to influence the game the way he knows best to do. And so with all that said, though, it's also not black and white. We know Pat Riley is opportunistic when it comes to trades. If the Bulls call and say, we want Winslow, this player, and your draft, and whoever you pick with your draft pick for Jimmy Butler, the Heat might do it. So it's not. Okay. I don't know that the Heat are all. They're gonna be. I don't think that they're gonna be shopping Justice Winslow. I don't think that they're gonna say, okay, we'll trade Winslow and our first pick for Nick Batum. I'm not sure that they do that. I'm not sure that that's a deal. I'm not sure that that's what Riley's gonna do. They're not gonna look at this roster and be like, hey, we're fine without Winslow. Let's trade him for something. I don't think that's what's gonna happen because you can look at his upside and say this guy could be an elite perimeter defender and a disruptor and make plays for us. Even if he's not scoring, he can lead to fast breaks. He can create versatility for us offensively and defensively that creates full court breaks and stuff like that can help the offense. He could play fast. He can handle the ball. I think that we get too bogged down in Winslow's raw stats the fact that he can't shoot threes very well, the fact that he's not scoring at the rim very well, and we look at that and say, this guy's a bust, where he affects the game in so many ways, and that's why his plus-minus was always positive when he was on the court, and he always has a positive influence on this team, is because he's able to help other people, even indirectly, score and make plays and stuff like that. So I think we just need to look at Winslow and say he only played 18 games. He wasn't used in the right role because Miami was still trying to figure it out. That's an addition to this team next season. That's already, if the Heat were to re-sign this group and keep it together, they're already better next year because Winslow is going to be healthy.
Yeah, that leads me to my next question. I was just about to bring that up. If Miami somehow keeps his team intact rolling into next season, adds a draft pick, doesn't make a significant addition in free agency other than just to bring in their own free agents, where does Winslow fit in? Is he the starter automatically? Is he a guy that you bring into a really, really good second unit along with Tyler Johnson and James Johnson, and you continue to start Magruder the same way that you start Luke Babbitt over somebody who's potentially better? I struggle to think about where his fit
is. Are you saying that Babbitt comes back too? Because he's whole group comes back. I think you just play him at Magruder's spot.
You start him at the small forward position.
Yeah, and then Magruder comes off the bench behind him,
alongside Tyler Johnson and James Johnson, theoretically.
Yeah, I think that's probably where he is. I do think that, look, Magruder got better at 3-point shooting as the season went along. I think
he's
that would
38%.
Yeah, I think that happens to Winslow if he's in Magruder's spot right now. As long as Waiters and Dragic are driving and kicking and getting these guys wide open shots, Winslow can make wide open threes. It was just like when he was asked to shoot off the dribble and stuff like that. I really believe that if you put Winslow in that spot, Magruder had zero expectations. Zero. Winslow had so many expectations, and no matter what players tell you, that stuff gets in their head. He's like,
absolutely.
I'm supposed to make 3-pointers, and that gets into his head every time he's got a wide open three. But if you put him in that spot and you allow him to keep shooting, I think he eventually finds his stroke and he finds his form. And he doesn't need to be elite. He just needs to make 1/3 of his 3-pointers, and that's it. And that's good enough. And that's a huge positive impact on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to see it. Too often, I think we saw Winslow hang his head a little bit. Him and Richardson both are not necessarily streaky, but guys that lose confidence in their shot pretty easily. You know, they take a shot, and next thing you know, they won't be able to hit any others. And I think Magruder certainly had a lot less pressure on him because no one was expecting anything from him, because he was a guy who worked his way up and just had nothing less to lose. You know, even when I spoke to him, you know, he was so appreciative of the process of going through everything. And he said it clearly. He said, you know what, I feel like I'm more mature as a result of having gone through all this, and I know what to expect. And look, he's 25. I mean, this is in comparison to Winslow, who's 5 years his junior. This is a guy who also is a first-round pick, has the weight of that expectation on him, you know, a lottery pick. And it certainly changes, you know, how you see yourself as a potential building block. And, you know,
that could be the value of bringing Waiters back, right?
Yeah.
Like, because if you have Waiters and Dragic in that backcourt, you're like, oh, those are the guys that are going to score all the points.
Right.
I'm just going to sit here and make a three every once in a while.
Sure. They'll kick it out. And again, if the shot's not there, I see the potential in Winslow in creating shots that Magruder can't. He's more capable, I think, of being a better third drive and kick option. Could you see multiple drives from Goran to Deion to Winslow, all of them rotating and rotating until they finally get that open shot on the perimeter? It could really be a nice free-flowing offense, one that, you know, is even better than the version that we've seen this year.
That's a great point. That third ball handler that the starting lineup doesn't have. Really, what you see when the team subs in James Johnson for Luke Babbitt, all of a sudden there's a third ball handler. That could be the way this unit starts. So, okay. I think we're both still excited about Justice Winslow then.
Yeah.
All right. Last and final question. This one from Taylor Monk. Let's go to the draft. Looking at draft prospects for the Miami Heat, I'd be excited if we landed Miles Bridges from Michigan State. He's similar to Justice Winslow with his strength and versatility on defense, and he's not a terrible catch-and-shoot player either. We talk about finding the next star player from the 14 to 30 range, and I think he has the potential to be that. He's probably going to get overlooked with everybody wanting guards in this draft, and this draft being so guard-heavy at the top. I think we are set as far as guards for now, and I'd like to take a shot on finding as many versatile wings as possible. I don't know if you've gotten much of a chance to. Who does Michigan State play in the tournament? I gotta look that up now.
Don't they face Miami?
Is it Miami?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right too. That's a tough draw for Miami. Damn. But so look, Miami fans, you'll at least be able to get to watch them.
Yeah.
I'm just double checking, not because I don't believe you, but
no, I'm not as knowledgeable on the collegiate bracket as is it Miami?
Yep. You're right. Okay. It's March 17th at 9:20 p.m. according to this CBS Sports bracket that I'm looking at. So definitely take a look at him. Miles Bridges is a guy that I go back and forth on all the time. He's okay. I think he's like an inch taller than Winslow, but he's listed at
6'6".
Yeah, and like Winslow's
with a 6'8" and a half wingspan, basically.
Winslow's wingspan is almost 7 feet. It's longer than Bridges, so.
He's currently slated by Draft Express, and they've already got a mock draft available. He's currently slated to go 12th to the Charlotte Hornets.
So he might not even be on the board when Miami picks. But hypothetically, if he is, let's talk about that fit, because Bridges is super athletic. Like, he can jump higher than Winslow. I don't want to compare him to Winslow too much, but a lot of draft Knicks are already doing it. I agree with the notion with Taylor that let's get as many versatile wings as possible on this roster and just see who blooms into a star. I love that theory. I love go get the athletic competitive guy. That's Miles Bridges. Go get the guy that can dunk. I mean, Miles Bridges is a guy that can at the very least win a dunk contest. So that would be neat, because I don't know if a Miami Heat players ever won a dunk contest. But
yeah, what are you talking about? Harold Miner.
Oh, Harold Miner. What am I talking about? Yeah, you're right.
Twice.
Yeah, I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm going to delete that from the podcast because I sound like an idiot. I'm just going to keep this whole thing in. But
if you're still listening with us.
Trust me, I know what I'm talking about. But as far as Miles Bridges, I go back and forth all the time because I'm like, all right, would I want him on my team? Generic my team sense, right? Yeah, he's really versatile. He's super athletic. He does have potential. People that we talk to, like we talked to Sam Vecenie on an earlier podcast, he loves Miles Bridges. Like, draft people we did a all-you-can-heat draft board at allyoucanheat.com, and I brought in Cole Zwicker, who does a lot of scouting and draft stuff for us at the Step Back.
Nice.
And I say for us, like, I'm in charge of the Step Back. I'm not. David and I just write there. But he does a fantastic job. I love Cole's work. I think he does an awesome job of scouting and finds, like, really nuanced stuff about these guys that I don't see. He likes Miles Bridges. So I'm like, okay, guys that like Miles Bridges are guys that I respect, so I'm going to like Miles Bridges. But when I think about him on the Heat, where does he fit in? I don't know if he's a power forward. Man. I don't know if he's a small forward. And if he is a small forward, then what's he taking away from Winslow? I'm not sure that Winslow's a power forward, even though I kind of go back and forth on that too. I don't know. I don't know, man. I don't know if you've got an opinion on Miles Bridges.
No, not necessarily on Bridges, just... I just think that the power forward position is one that you'd arguably want to shore up a little bit. I don't know if Okara White, for all that he's shown this season, I don't know if he's the long-term answer at that. I think.
Do you think Winslow can play power forward? Like, starting? Like, do you think his primary position
without a doubt, I just don't think it's like liable to happen. I think we keep seeing the blowback against that from the players themselves and guys like LeBron and Paul George and others, you know, that it's just too taxing. Now, if you can convince somebody to take the power forward position and kind of have the same similar role as Shane Battier did, would you switch it more or less where somebody that's maybe capable of guarding, smaller wings will guard bigger players and then allow a guy like, you know, LeBron did during the Big Three era to kind of guard those wing players and not put as much wear and tear while, you know, ostensibly holding down the power forward position on offense. And if you can do something like that,
where you have Bridges and Winslow as your two forwards, we're not going to call them small. We're not going to call them power. We're not going to call them a three or a four. Those are our two forwards, and they're versatile and they're flexible and they're switchable. That could work. And this is what, and I've been thinking about that. You're just like, all right, one of them will just call the power forward, but ultimately you guys are going to just grab the nearest forward next to you on your way down on a defensive possession. And maybe that's just all it is. At the same time, I love Winslow and Bridges' potential in a switching style of defense. But I love that fit, because if you have Bridges and Winslow, that's an elite perimeter defense. as far as being able to switch guys and play and defend multiple positions, because they're not only both capable of guarding opposing fours on a possession to possession basis, but they can also guard opposing ones, you know, opposing point guards. They're able to get in front of those guys. The only problem with that is you have Hassan Whiteside in the middle, who's not a switching player whatsoever, and Miami doesn't necessarily play a switching style of defense. So now you kind of have to ask yourself about that fit. Can we draft Bridges, put Winslow and Bridges together as our forwards, and can we trust Whiteside to learn how to switch, even just a little bit, just enough to the extent that Andrew Bogut did or Festus Ezeli did for the Warriors, right? Like, they weren't always involved in the switches, but they were able to do it just enough, or like where Kevin Love was able to get on Steph Curry on that final possession. Like, can you do it just enough? I don't know that Whiteside can.
You know, and you also have to take into consideration the fact that these players are so young, and they may not be expected to contribute right away. They might just be more long-term projects. We're already, you know, looking at starting lineups with a guy like Bridges, you know, starting alongside Winslow, and that might not necessarily be the best-case scenario. They might not be ready for that. It's, you know, there's a lot to break down in between now and the draft, and, you know, that could all change. What if you do somehow add a guy like Blake Griffin? What if, what if you don't re-sign Luke Babbitt, et cetera? You know, what if you can't get James Johnson assigned and you're starting to look around for other more versatile players? What if you have to move on from James Johnson to, say, Patterson from the Toronto Raptors, a guy who plays almost a very similar role? You know, there's a lot of different options there. And
free agency
happens
after the draft. So it's like, right. How do you even know? I am under the general idea, though, take the best player available. If Bridges is the best player available on the board when the Heat pick, I don't think that you should overthink it. If he's the best guy available and has the biggest upside, and the Heat front office and scouts are believers in Bridges' ability, I think you just take him. I don't think you worry about it, because we've seen time and time again where teams will just pass up the best player available. A guy like, you know, the guy that they have at that position doesn't work out and they've got nothing to backfill, or
you see, I'm starting to disagree with that. So that whole premise of taking the best player available, because the more that I follow the league and the more closely I answer the situation, the more important I see fit being the biggest factor in how a player develops. Not just playing time, et cetera, but how they fit alongside a coaching staff that's able to get the most out of them. You trust that Miami will be able to do that with any player, but that's not always been the case.
But we don't know what the fit for this Heat team is going to be. Just to play devil's advocate, I agree with you on that. That's where we talk about San Antonio making a deal to move and get Kawhi Leonard, because they believed in the fit, not only the player's ability, they believed in the fit. We've got a position here at small forward. Let's go after this guy. And that fit ended up working really well for Kawhi. But
absolutely.
At the same time, the Heat they've got a bunch of expiring contracts. Like, what's the, like, I don't know what this team looks like in 2 years. So is there a fit that they necessarily have to look at? You know what I mean? Like, they don't have like one need. They just need talent. And I think that you take the most talented guy. If that's your need, that's your fit. It's just talent. I don't know.
It could change. What if you're optimistic that you can re-sign Waiters and James Johnson, et cetera, if that's how Ellisberg and Riley plan on moving forward, then do you want to take a guy who might be more of a tweener like Bridges, or commit to more of a, you know, typical power forward player who can, you know, again, maybe you're considered, you're concerned with losing Willie Reed. Maybe he is the biggest concern as far as the potential free agents that you have, and you want to get a guy who might be able to play a little 4 or 5. You've got Okaro White who can do that. You've got James Johnson who can do that, but maybe you want somebody else who you can groom into that role as time moves on.
I think you're on the right track there, by the way.
Yeah, there's a lot of questions.
It's not an easy job to have.
No, we do it as well as we can, and we did bring Dion Waiters to Miami, you know, but it's a challenge.
Yeah, I won't rule out Miles Bridges, but I'm not willing to go all in on Bridges like I was willing to go in all in on Kelly Oubre a couple years ago. I haven't found my Oubre yet.
That was still a mistake, unfortunately.
What? I'm still.
You think he's being? Are you still on the Oubre train?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, I think Otto Porter's emergence has been great for Washington, but it's hurt Oubre. Oubre's got a chance, man. He's one of those guys. I think Oubre and Julius Randle, those are my guys. I think you put them in the right fit, and they could blow up. They could be really good players.
No, I don't know. I don't like recommending to our audience to listen to other podcasts, but if you get a chance to listen to Rob Mahoney's The Breakaway, The most recent one was about Julius Randle, and specifically the injury, when it occurred, how he felt, and his comeback from that. It was really interesting and pretty scary stuff. I mean, it was a pretty severe break that developed there and cost him his whole rookie season. I'm all in on the Randle Express. I think, you know, he seems like a really nice guy, and he's already gone through a hell of a difficult start to what could be a promising career.
I've got that downloaded on my phone. I've got it ready to go whenever I get a chance to listen to it. I'm going to.
Let's do it.
All right. Well, that's all we have for today. Thanks to our sponsor, SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOHEAT and get $20 back after your very first SeatGeek purchase. And whether you're listening on iTunes, Google Play, or Stitcher, we appreciate it. You can get in touch with the show on Twitter at LockedOnHeat or by email, where you can send us mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's LockedOnHeat@gmail.com. And if you're not subscribed already, please do so. To go get the podcast automatically every day, then go to iTunes, rate us, review us, say nice things about us. And we'll catch you next time. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.